Hey, Fidelity. What's it cost to invest with the Fidelity app?
Start with as little as $1 with no account fees or trade commissions on U.S. stocks and ETFs.
That's music to my ears.
I can only talk.
Investing involves risk, including risk of loss. Zero account fees apply to retail brokerage accounts only. $0 commission applies to online U.S. equity trades and ETFs and retail Fidelity accounts. Sell order assessment fee not included. Some account types and securities excluded. Details at fidelity.com/commissions. Fidelity Brokerage Services LLC, member NYSE, SIPC.
Picture this. It's Saturday morning and you're on your John Deere compact tractor. You're effortlessly breaking ground on your new landscaping project. Next, you're moving piles of rocks just by moving a lever. And now, you're enjoying the warmth of the sun as you clear brush across your pasture. We could keep trying to put you in the moment, but to really understand everything you can do with a John Deere compact tractor, you just have to get in the seat. Learn more at johndeere.com/get in the seat or visit a dealer near you.
Hello and welcome to Money Girl, a podcast that helps you master your money so you can live rich and love the journey. My name is Laura Adams. I'm a personal finance expert and award-winning author of several books, including Money Girl Smart Moves to Grow Rich. For today's show, I have an interesting interview with Doug McCormick. He's a really smart guy who's a Harvard MBA, entrepreneur, and author. We talk about some of the ideas in his new book, called Family Inc., Using Business Principles to Maximize Your Family's Wealth. Doug's book is all about how to use rock-solid corporate finance concepts to make better decisions and improve your personal finances. He spent decades managing money for institutional clients, such as insurance companies, pension funds, entrepreneurs, and high-net-worth families. We talk about his belief that every family needs a chief financial officer or CFO, and how even if you don't own a business, you are an entrepreneur because you sell your labor, which is your largest asset. Here are some of the important issues that I cover with Doug. We talk about how to manage your labor and career as an investment and protect it with the right kinds of insurance. We cover when to consider going back to school and what types of advanced degrees and skills can pay off the most. How education allows you to extend your working career, earn more, and have greater financial security. We talk about why typical financial literacy can oversimplify the role of debt and actually hold you back from achieving success. And how to stay focused on the big picture of your long-term financial goals and think more like a business owner than an investor, even when the stock market takes you on a roller coaster ride. No matter your stage in life, I think our conversation will help you manage your family's finances better and make the most of your opportunities. Now, here's my interview with Doug. Doug, thanks so much for joining me on the Money Girl podcast.
Glad to be here, Laura. Thank you.
And congratulations on your new book, Family Inc. Tell me why you wanted to write this book.
I saw a real need and an opportunity to have a positive impact on a lot of people who I think are seeking ways to better navigate the financial game of life. The way our economy is evolving, these skill sets are becoming more important, and our current education system does not do a good job of teaching these life skills.
Yeah, I couldn't agree with you more. Tell me how you got started as a professional investor.
I'd probably have to go way back to my early childhood. My father was an educator, but enjoyed following the markets, and he got me interested at a very early age. And, nothing like success to breed interest, so he got me involved in a couple early stocks that did well, and that seemed like a very interesting hobby.
That's great. So your whole book is based on the premise that families need to think about their finances more like a chief financial officer of a company. Why do you think that's so powerful for families?
Well, I think I personally have struggled with trying to understand the impact of disparate decisions. So the way the market's currently arranged, people sell you investment products, they sell you insurance products, and it's hard to understand how those choices impact one another. And I think this Family Inc. framework is very powerful because, first of all, it allows you to recognize all the assets the family has, not only your investment assets, but but your labor assets, which for many people are the largest asset you may own. And it also helps connect these disparate decisions so that people can understand that their choices around education and career impact their choices around insurance, investment, and retirement. So for me, it's a very elegant way to think about all these competing demands.
Yeah, we'll come back to the education piece. But first, I want to ask you to elaborate on why you think labor is our biggest asset.
Well, you know, essentially, you know, as a young person, you graduate from high school or college and you've got, you know, 50 plus years opportunity to essentially sell your labor in the marketplace for money. And, you know, that is an asset. We should think about it the same way an owner of land would think about, you know, a natural resource like lumber or coal that would exist. So it's something that we have to sell. It's a perishable asset, but it is, I think, the most important asset that every family and every individual owns.
Yeah, I think so many people underestimate or undervalue their earning potential. Tell me how you think education level influences our lifetime earnings. I mean, certainly those with advanced degrees have the opportunity to earn more. What would you say to somebody who's maybe thinking about going back to school or even someone who's struggling to pay off student loans right now?
First and foremost, you have to be honest with yourself about your interest in pursuing a career that requires an education and your aptitude to be successful in achieving the education and applying that in a career. The worst investment I think many people could make is to invest in the education and not take advantage of it. But having said that, if you do have the aptitude and the interest, I believe it's by far and away one of the absolute very best investments that you can make today. You know, the statistics are pretty clear. Higher levels of education result in higher average income, results in less unemployment, and one that many people underappreciate, it also allows most people to extend their earning capacity or their careers. You know, if you're, you know, in a manual labor environment, by the time you're 60, 65, that may be difficult to continue. But if you're in a white-collar profession that's utilizing your intellect, many people can be very successful and very effective, you know, well into their 70s. And so I think that additional earning power provides tremendous financial security.
What about listeners who are thinking, wow, Doug, well, I'd love to go to graduate school, but I can't afford the cost of it, much less the loss of income that I might have to experience while I go back to school full time?
Yeah, I would say you need to differentiate the quality of the investment versus how to finance it. And so I think, you know, as I said before, the investment is a very good one. And I think there are lots of ways to finance this, such as school loans and other programs to facilitate access to good education. So, you know, my advice to young people is if you have the aptitude and the interest, you can't afford not to go to school.
Yeah, I went back and got an MBA in my, gosh, I guess I was late 20s, and I really did think about it as an investment. Not only was it a lot of money, but it did take me away or was a distraction from my career at the time. I was lucky enough to have an employer who really supported me going back to school and even paid, I think, about a third of the cost. So I think a lot of folks can leverage their employer if they are, if they have that as a benefit. They should definitely try to maximize it and even make a proposal to their employer to get even more reimbursement for education. If you can really make that case, you never know. They may actually come with more benefit than you anticipate. That was the case for me.
Yeah, I find that people who have worked in an organization for a period of time who have done well and have demonstrated their long-term potential for growth, you know, this conversation is usually well received, and employers are generally pretty flexible about accommodating this additional experience in a self-interested way, right? It's an opportunity for them to bring you back with future growth opportunities.
What are some of the best degrees to get that can maximize an investment in your education?
Well, so one of the things that I'm a big advocate of is flexibility. And what I mean by that is, you know, the markets, whether they be financial markets or the economy or businesses in general, are very dynamic today. They're all competing in a rapidly changing environment. And so skill sets that give you the flexibility to move geographies, to move industries, and to move in different job types, I think, create real value. It's kind of the optionality of those skill sets. And to me, that leads to skill sets or degrees that are very focused on problem solving with a bias for underlying sciences and mathematics. Not necessarily because you will apply those specific mathematics in your job, but I think it's a disciplined way of thinking and solving problems. And ultimately, that's what employers are looking for, problem solvers.
Why do you think that hard work and talent really may not be enough to create wealth?
I think it's pretty clear in the marketplace. You know, hard work and talent are certainly conditions that are required for success, but I think it also you have to be thoughtful to allocate your labor to attractive opportunities. And so one of my big beliefs that I communicate in the book is, you know, you should think about yourself as an investor when you allocate your labor to these different jobs. And, it, you know, not only do you need to work hard and be talented, but you need to deploy that labor against attractive opportunities in industries that are growing, that will create opportunity for advancement and also compensation for your labor.
Let's talk a little bit about debt. How do you think families should think about borrowing money to finance assets?
So, you know, I think there's a general oversimplification of the role of debt in the family financial structure. And so, obviously, if you're going to, you know, borrow to consume, go eat out, go buy clothes, buy a car, that's clearly not a good investment. But if you think about debt as a way to finance good investments, things like education, things like investments in the marketplace, entrepreneurship, or a home, I think those are all very legitimate. And obviously, debt has a risk associated with it, so it needs to be prudent. But I think it's a valuable tool for the family CFO.
Yeah, debt is a tool. We need to use it very judiciously. But in the long run, if it is helping you make money, if it's helping you purchase assets that appreciate over time, it's a good thing. If you're buying assets that don't appreciate, like you mentioned, clothes, vacations, and just basically running up credit card debt, it's a bad idea.
Yeah, well, I think this is one of the problems with, you know, kind of financial literacy programs today. I think they often teach to the lowest common denominator. And, you know, the reality is many of these decisions are complicated. They require an investment in the individual to really understand the choices. So I would agree, if you don't have any debt, it's very hard to you know, find yourself in financial distress. But the flip side of that is I think you've probably foregone valuable investment opportunities if you haven't taken advantage of debt.
Money Girl is sponsored by Claritin. If you're like me and you suffer from allergies, you know this time of year can be pretty rough. There's a lot of sneezing, itchy eyes, congestion, and they can really hold you back from living the life you want to live. Luckily for those with allergies, you can live Claritin Clear with Claritin D. This is a product designed for serious allergy sufferers. It's got two ingredients in one pill that relieve allergy symptoms and decongest your nose so you can breathe better. This double action combo of prescription strength allergy medicine and the best decongestant relieves all the symptoms that you suffer. And what I love about Claritin D is that it starts working in as little as 30 minutes. Plus, it's non-drowsy, so you can still make the most of your day. I can take Claritin D and then get on the mic and record a podcast without being too congested. Fast and powerful relief is just a quick trip away. Find Claritin D at the pharmacy counter. Ask for Claritin D at your local pharmacy counter. You don't even need a prescription. Go to Claritin.com right now for a discount so you can live Claritin Clear. Use as directed.
People today can spend half their lives over 50. So it's good to be financially ready for what's important to you as you get older, like a family vacation.
Cannonball!
Or starting your dream business.
Welcome to Connie's Coffee. How may I help you?
AARP's trusted financial tools can help you plan for whatever your future holds. That's why the younger you are, the more you need AARP. Start planning today at aarp.org/moneytools.
Cheers to a great day and this ice-cold Corona. You know what would make this day even better? My grandma's carne asada.
Or your grandma here with us, making carne asada.
She does love a cold Corona.
Throw in some dancing.
Oh, we can watch the game.
I'll drink to that.
So a backyard concert with football, food, dancing, and Corona?
And your grandma.
Or we could keep it simple.
Simple is good. Want a Corona?
Thanks. Salud to the perfect day.
Corona, la vida más fina. Get your Corona at ordercorona.com. Relax responsibly. Corona Extra Beer, imported by Crown Imports, Chicago, Illinois.
You make the case for owning more stocks than conventional asset allocation. Why?
I think it starts with the Family Inc. business model. And, you know, we talk about the fact that an important asset, and in many cases the most important asset for the family, is your labor. And if you include that in your asset allocation strategies, I think your labor looks very much like an annuity or a bond. You know, you get paid out a little bit each year, and it's pretty consistent over a 30, 40, 50-year career. And so I think in that context, it would make sense to get more exposure to equities. I think the other big thing that I am a believer in is that the number one influencer of your risk profile is your expected holding period. And if you have capital that you expect to be able to keep invested for a long period of time, you know, the risk associated with holding equities decreases dramatically. The last thing I would just comment on this topic is I think we all got to remember the goal. The goal of your investments is growing after tax, after inflation, purchasing power. And I think that's best accomplished through equities.
Right. So to kind of make that a little bit more simple for people to understand, the idea is that holding equities, holding stocks, they're risky. You know, you see it in the market. There's volatility every day. So if you're watching your investments on a minute-by-minute, day-by-day basis, it's going to seem pretty scary. But the idea is that equities have gotten very nice returns over long periods of time. And the idea with retirement is that you don't need this money, you know, typically for decades. So if you are looking at this in a long-term strategy, the day-to-day volatility really means nothing. The idea is that the money that you're investing will be worth more in 10, 20 years than it is today. So this is a really tough concept for a lot of people that don't have a stomach for volatility, and they feel like, oh my gosh, I just lost money. Even if it's only on paper, they take it so emotionally. And so the idea is that these equities over time are going to allow you to build up the retirement nest egg that you need to live for decades after you retire. So how can people sort of keep their emotions in check when it comes to stocks?
You know, I think it's being focused on the big picture, appreciating that history is on your side. You know, if you look back over the last 200 years, you know, over any reasonably long period of time, call it 20 years, equities have outperformed fixed income. And to your point, it's really a product of, over time, the higher expected return compensate you for that short-term volatility day-to-day. You know, the other thing that I think is really helpful as people watch the stock market is to think more like a business owner rather than an investor. And so, you know, the volatility or the movement of the underlying earnings of these indexes that we all invest in, like the S&P 500, is actually not very volatile. And you're not buying paper. You're buying very good businesses. When you buy the S&P, you're buying into Coca-Cola. You're buying into Apple and Google, and these businesses have very good prospects. And for me personally, I think less about what someone will be willing to pay for that stock tomorrow and more about how is that stock going to generate cash flow for me and my family over the next 50 years.
Right. And, you know, you think about buying a mutual fund or an ETF with these underlying equities. It's really the easiest way to become a business owner. If you're not an entrepreneur in your work life, it's like you become an instant business owner. And I think that is a mind shift to think about it that way versus gaining or losing money. And so you can make decisions that are, you know, hopefully less emotional that way and really trust that the indexes are going to work in your favor over time and show you an increase in that investment.
Totally agree, Laura. And I think the way the industry kind of measures itself, annual returns and annual volatility is a very nice, neat way to look at performance, because we all think about things in a calendar year. But back to your point, these are investments that you hope to consume, 20, 30, 40 years from now. And so annual performance really is kind of irrelevant, and we should be thinking more about performance over a decade or two decades. And in that, lens, this is really a very different risk profile.
You say that the biggest impediment to success is not deciding what to do, but rather having the conviction to do nothing. Explain what you mean by that.
Well, I think it's this concept we just talked about. So, the book recommends a relatively heavy equity bias. And so now you've followed that advice and you're in the marketplace, and absolutely for sure what we know is at some point you will encounter a significant market correction. And at that point, having the, conviction and the strategy to stay the course, continue to put in, money into your retirement programs, and continue to seek incremental equity exposure is tough emotionally to do. And so I think it's best accomplished through education and understanding, the logic behind it. But I think that's tough for many individuals.
What would you say to someone who's really just getting started investing? Maybe they are even a little late to the game and they've been perhaps living paycheck to paycheck. What are some ways to save money so you can free up more of your budget to invest?
So I guess the first thing I would say is, in some ways we talk a lot about investing, but the first investment you need to make is an investment in protecting yourself through insurances. And an investment in a rainy day fund, because surprises invariably happen. And once you've accomplished those two things, then I think you're well positioned to start becoming an investor in the market. I have a certain strategy that I recommend in the book, but I think the more important thing is to get invested. And if you're uncomfortable with the equity exposure that I've proposed, there's certainly nothing wrong with, a modestly more conservative portfolio if that's consistent with your perception of risk, and you can stick to that program.
Talk a little bit about the types of insurances you recommend for people to protect their labor asset.
Yeah, I think the big underappreciated risk is disability. If you look at statistics about the likelihood that a professional could become disabled over the course of a career, it's actually much higher than most people think. And so, financially, this is more challenging for a family than someone dying prematurely, because not only have you lost the income potential, but there are all kinds of costs associated with, getting care around the incurred disability. So, disability, absolutely first and foremost. I think life insurance, which is essentially, insurance to compensate the family if someone dies unexpectedly and you've lost that income stream. And then I think, a variety of insurances around liability management, whether it be umbrella liability or auto insurance. All of those, in my mind, are the foundation for good defense. And once you've got your defense in place, then I think it's time to play offense with your investment strategy.
Yeah, I recently did a podcast about 10 financial products you need to grow wealth, and disability insurance is one that often gets overlooked. We're actually more likely to become disabled before the age of 65 than to die, and that's a pretty shocking statistic when you think about it. So everyone who's earning an income really needs to seriously consider disability insurance. I think folks forget that health insurance just covers your medical bills. It doesn't cover the cost of your to live, food, housing, bills, if you do get injured and are unable to work. So that's a pretty important policy.
Well, Lauren, if you go back to the Family Inc. business model, I started this conversation with, your labor assets are generally your largest asset, and these insurances are designed to compensate the family if they have a tragic loss of that labor asset. So, again, I think it gets back to the power of looking at the family as a business, because you can directly see the asset and the loss of the asset and how they go together.
Terrific. Doug, this is incredible information. Tell the listeners where they can learn more about you and your new book.
So, familyinc.com is a website that provides some more information about the book, the philosophy. It also has some high-level tools that are essentially business tools applied to personal finance, an income statement, a balance sheet, how to think about the value of your lifetime labor. And also, obviously, the book is available on Amazon, other online retailers, and in your local bookstores.
Thanks so much for joining me, Doug.
Hey, Laura, I really appreciate the time. Enjoyed it.
To learn more about Doug, check out the notes for this show in the Money Girl section at quickanddirtytips.com. This is episode number 449, called Use Business Principles to Maximize Your Wealth. And that's also where you'll find the full archive of podcasts that predate what's available in iTunes or any other audio app that you may be using, like Stitcher, SoundCloud, or Spotify's mobile app. If you have money questions, comments, or suggestions for future show topics, a great place to interact with me and many other really smart people who are in this community is my private Facebook group called Dominate Your Dollars. To request your invitation, visit Dominate Your Dollars on Facebook or send me a text message for immediate access. Just text DOLLARS to the number 33444. I hope to see you there. That's all for now. I'll talk to you next week. Courtesy of Money Girl, your guide to a richer life.
People today can spend half their lives over 50. So it's good to be financially ready for what's important to you as you get older, like a family vacation.
Cannonball!
Or starting your dream business.
Welcome to Connie's Coffee. How may I help you?
AARP's trusted financial tools can help you plan for whatever your future holds. That's why the younger you are, the more you need AARP. Start planning today at aarp.org/moneytools.
Whether you're a morning person or a bedtime procrastinator, everyone deserves a mattress that works for their style. And you'll find the best mattress for you at Ashley. The new Tempur-Adapt collection at Ashley brings you one-of-a-kind body-conforming technology, making every sleep tailored to be your best. The collection also features cool-to-the-touch covers and motion absorption to help minimize sleep disruptions from partners, pets, or kids. Shop the all-new Tempur-Adapt collection at Ashley in-store or online at ashley.com. Ashley, for the love of home.